Council come to order. Carla, call the roll.
Adams. Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony in City Council, lobbyists must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Please read item 1269 and 1270.
1269, consider the proposal of Mississippi Partners, LLC, and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval of a comprehensive plan map amendment and zoning map amendment for property located at 810 North Fremont Street, LU06118204CPZC. 1270, amend the comprehensive plan map designations and change zoning at 810 North Fremont Street at the request of Mississippi Partners, LLC, LU06118204CPZC.
Thank you. The city attorney will now explain the hearing process.
Today, this is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. The evidence may be in the form of testimony, letters, petitions, slides, photographs, maps, or drawings. Any photographs, drawings, maps, or other items you show to the council during your testimony should be given to the council clerk at the end of your testimony to make sure they become part of the record. Testimony concerning the hearings officer's recommendation will be heard today as follows. We'll begin with a staff report for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the applicant will have 15 minutes to address the council. After the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes. Next, council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the proposal. These people will also have 3 minutes. If there was testimony in opposition to the proposal, the applicant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the hearings officer's recommendation. If the vote is a tentative vote, council will set a future date for adoption of findings and a final vote on the recommendation. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter. There are several guidelines for presenting testimony in this hearing. They are established by zoning code and state law. First, testimony must be directed to the approval criteria. Any testimony and evidence you present must be directed toward applicable approval criteria for the review or other criteria in the comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report. Two, your issues must be raised with specificity. If you fail to raise the issues clearly enough to give council and the parties an opportunity to respond, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Finally, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to the proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court to challenge those conditions.
Thank you. Do any members of council wish to declare a conflict of interest? No council members have a conflict of interest to declare. Do any members of council have any ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of hearing to disclose? No council members have ex parte contacts to declare. Do any members of council have questions or other preliminary matters that need to be addressed before we begin this hearing? We'll begin the hearing with a staff report from BDS for up to 10 minutes.
Thank you. I'm Kathleen Stokes, BDS staff for this case, and thank you, Mayor Potter and commissioners. This is a request to amend the comprehensive plan designation for the site from industrial sanctuary to central employment, and also to change the zoning on the site from IG1, general industrial, to central employment with design overlay EXD. The request is being made to allow, as the applicant said, a likely scenario of mixed-use development. It's envisioning ground floor, commercial, and upper levels of office and residential. There aren't any definite plans for redevelopment of the site, but short-term use of the site for about 5 years is seen as a conversion of the existing structure to retail space. no development plans or plans for modifications to the development of the site are being proposed as part of this review. But when those plans do come forward, they would be, if the amendments are approved, they would be subject to the design overlay requirements that they meet the community design standards or be approved through design review. The uses that are being anticipated for this site are allowed under the EX zoning, but they're not allowed under the existing IG1 zone because that zone doesn't allow household uses except for floating homes like houseboats. And it also limits the floor area that can be devoted to retail and office uses. The EX designation that's requested doesn't place any limits on these uses beyond the development standards for the zone. And that would allow, in this case, about 52,149 square feet of floor area in a structure that would have a 65-foot height limit. However, the applicant has made an addendum to their original proposal in order to respond to issues of constraints on the traffic system, transportation system, and that addendum would limit the floor area for the site to 45,000 square feet. The approval criteria for this review is that for comprehensive plan map amendments, code section 33.810.050A, and for zoning map amendments, code sections 33.855.050 and 33.855.060. The criteria for the comprehensive plan map amendments include by reference the Oregon State land use goals and the titles of Metro Functional Plan. This slide shows a comparison of the existing zoning to the proposed zoning, and you see the property on the northern portion of this block fronting onto Fremont and running between Mississippi and Cook. Currently IG1, there's EXD to the west, and then further to the east, currently and would remain, if approved, abutting an IG1 zone and have that also across the street to the east. The site plan shows the footprint of the existing building on this site, which abuts the southern property line. It's currently an underutilized industrial site. This view is seen looking to the southwest from Albina and at the corner with Fremont. And this view is of the east side of the building and showing it abutting the building on the south, which houses an auto body shop. The applicant site formerly was a fuel station, now cleaned up and mainly used for truck and equipment storage, but as you can see from this slide, there's not a whole lot of that going on in the site either. There's a small retail use existing on the northwest corner that consists of a lunch and coffee wagon with a couple of seating areas in front of it. The EX zone would encourage transit-supportive development, and that is served by the number 4 Fessenden bus line, which is a frequent service line that stops right in front of the site. The street's also a city walkway and city bikeway. The uses allowed in the EX zone would better support these alternative forms of transportation as well. The area around the site, as we'll do a little tour here, to the northwest is Mississippi Avenue with a historic retail district that is mostly a mixture of medium industrial and storefront retail uses. This is the west side of the site looking toward I-405 and downtown. The freeway is close by, but truck access in this area is very limited due to the width of the streets and also the surrounding development, which makes a conflict, and actually the streets are posted as no truck parking. Site across the street on the west side of Mississippi was rezoned to EXD in compliance with the comprehensive plan designation in 2006. And again, the idea was to allow a redevelopment with a mix of residential and commercial uses. Further to the west, there is a multi-dwelling zone, and there's a vintage multi-dwelling structure shown in this picture. I had mentioned that the south property line abuts the IG zone with an auto body repair shop, which is seen here. And further to the south is Albina Yard, which is part of the Bureau of Maintenance operations. And there's another view of it here. Across to the southeast, the access to the area is limited. You can see in the distance a street that is blocked for through traffic. One of the conditions of approval in this recommendation would limit the number of peak hour AM trips in order to ensure that the street system in the area can absorb the potential traffic that could be generated. Across Fremont to the north, there's a residential area, north and northeast. It's zoned R2, low-density multi-dwelling, and there's a mixture of residential structures. There's single and multi-dwelling there. If this proposal is approved, the EX designation could encourage redevelopment that would enhance this area. Condition of approval would ensure that safety standards are met by review by the Police Bureau for their safety and security standards, which have to do with the types of locks that are used in residential development, types of exterior lighting, and other things that meet the SEPTED standards. The requested designation would allow uses that would create a transition from the residential areas to the north and east and that more active, viable industrial area that's to the south. The requested amendments were found on balance. The comprehensive plan map amendment was found on balance to be equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan than the existing designation, as long as we consider the conditions that were recommended to limit the total number of AM peak trips. The city's service agencies found that services are adequate for the requested zoning map amendments as long as the requirements are met at the time of building permits for stormwater management. And also the previously mentioned condition limiting the number of AM peak hour vehicle trips and the condition that requires a police review of residential redevelopment plans. Therefore, the recommendation to the council is for approval of the requested map amendments from Industrial Sanctuary to Central Employment with the design overlay, subject to the conditions that I've already mentioned a couple of times, so I won't go through those again. I believe that, yes, we have here Jamie Jeffries from Bureau of Transportation, or the Office of Transportation. So if you have any particular questions regarding the transit impacts and how those have been addressed, she can answer those questions for you. Do you have any questions of me at this time?
I do. And it's on that topic. I noted in your presentation, and the hearings officer found with respect to the AM trips and the number of limits, he actually put in bold that the building square footage or dwelling units shall not be converted to trips and compared to the maximum established. The established trip rates for these land use categories shall not be altered. I don't know if that's been in other land use cases we've had before. I don't recall seeing that. Seems kind of emphatic. And I guess I'm wondering, how do we monitor that after the development happens? I mean, as you said in your presentation, there's a limitation on the number of AM trips that will be allowed. What's the way that we enforce that?
There is a matrix that is included as part of that condition, and any request for new development or any tenant improvements would have to include information that showed that the limits on square footage for the various uses within that matrix are being met. The matrix was actually designed by the Office of Transportation, and it has actually that type of formula has been used in two or three other cases within the last couple of years. I would say that Ms. Jeffries can probably answer that question in more detail.
Could you come forward, please? I had the same question, particularly about the monitoring of it.
Yeah, I'm less interested in the methodology of how you developed or even why you developed it. It seems that there's a particular emphasis that there be a limit on the number of trips and that the limit that he established should not be exceeded. So I'm just curious, how is that monitored?
Good afternoon, members of the council. My name is Jamie Jeffrey. I'm with the Office of Transportation. Regarding the note that is provided with the table in Condition A, one of the notes applies to the trip rates, which we have established in accordance with demonstrating compliance with the overall trip limit of 70 trips. So one of the notes is that an applicant wouldn't be able to come in and say, well, I don't have 1.49 trips per square footage. You know, I think my rate should be 1.3. So we said this is where we set the bar, and so this is the tool we're going to use to confirm that we're within the acceptable level. Essentially, when someone comes in with a building permit application, they will provide an accounting of sorts that says, here's our square footage. This is the type of use it is. I'm going to multiply that square footage by the trip rate that's in this table, and I'm going to show you that I'm within the 70 that equals 70 or less.
So if they have trips in actuality that are exceeding the 70, they're not at fault.
Their building permit, they would be out of compliance with this. So if it came in at 72, they would have to shave off some square footage.
I guess I'm actually talking about after the permit's let, the building's constructed, they're using the building, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden they have 72 trips per morning rather than the 70.
The reality. In transportation, we work in the world of, when we're looking at transportation analysis, to a certain extent, we work in the theoretical world. The information we have for trip rates is based on averages. So
we don't actually enforce a limit. So,
correct.
Oops, sorry, you're the 71st car this morning. You're
right.
Come there.
Correct. No one's out counting to see if they are.
It's just a methodology by which you get to the maximum square feet they're allowed.
Yes.
Okay.
And so the table provides an easy, certain way of just doing the math. Then after that, we say, you might be less, you might be more, but since we're generally working with averages anyway, you know, okay, this is what we established will balance things out as the system, you know, grows or development kind of comes into
Great.
Play.
Thank you.
Is that why they requested 45,000 instead of the up to the 52,000?
Yes. The 52,000 was going to provide more trips into the intersection at Vancouver and Fremont, and we had capacities drop below our performance standards. So in order to sort of keep them within that limit, we said, well, you could go up to this, which they, you know, they came to us and said, this is what would keep it without going over. So that's how we landed there.
Mayor, I have a question concerning the site across the street on the west side of Mississippi. Now that, since I drive through there quite a bit, I'm familiar, that's a substantial piece of property that's undeveloped, and I'm guessing, given what's happening to the north, that it would be a target area for someone to put in mixed-use development, fairly dense residential something. First question is, do we know whether the owner of that property is planning to develop it across the street?
I actually was staff for that zone change, and there was a similar situation with traffic impacts that was resolved through a similar matrix for that site. It did limit the square footage of various uses to be within the threshold. However, there was, as a part of that condition, a caveat that when or if a left turn lane were constructed, I believe Jamie was also the transportation person on that review, when it was constructed for that left turn from westbound from Fremont to Vancouver, that then those limitations would go away. Then this case came in sort of on the heels of that one, and we said, wow, it looks as though all of the surplus that was left in the transportation system in this area was used up by that previous property in their review, and so there was a lot of consideration of how could that be found to allow this further development in the area. And again, I would defer to Jamie on this, but there was a potential based on development proposals that have come in the last 2 years that will require some dedication of right-of-way, which would then actually make it possible to put in that left turn lane. And so since that possibility was presented, then the system can absorb some more impacts, some more traffic, and then it became a process of conferring, looking at this site and saying how much more could this site generate with the idea that this left turn lane will be constructed.
I could probably add to that just a little bit. So the site across the street assumed a certain potential level of development. It triggered a mitigation at the intersection that these folks had to deal with as well. With the mitigation, then their limitation was lifted. This proposal considered the development that could occur with the property across the street and included that.
Okay, that was my question.
And then
it's probably embarrassingly simplistic for me to ask it, but that was what was on my mind. Do you do the assessment based on the assumption that the adjacent land has been developed to its highest and best use, or that it's vacant and therefore there isn't a cumulative effect? If you imagine the kind of development going on in Mississippi, the multifamily, the 4 or 5 story wood frame buildings that are enormous, you put that across the street. This zoning review anticipates that any redevelopment on this site is done in the context of the allowable development, redevelopment across the street, and that's what you're saying.
Correct. So there's 3 components. We said you have to count what the site across the street will include to the system. You have to count what the background growth might be based on our model, and you have to count what the potential is for your site. You add those 3 up, and when they did that, they found that they still tripped it even if this mitigation was in place. So we said, okay, the mitigation will be in place, but we also need to limit you just a little bit further.
Okay. It's very clear, and I think I understand it, which means that's something. That's a feat, so thank you for that.
That site on the west side was part of the industrial area, and I think it was a couple of years ago the council agreed to take it out.
It was a site that was designated in the comp plan to go from an industrial zone to an EXD zone. And so it was a hearings officer decision at that point because the comp plan had already been established as that's the direction we wanted to take that site. This site didn't have that comp plan designation on it.
This site is not designated significant industrial land.
Correct.
No. I just had one question. It's more in the vein of educating ourselves, too. But the AM peak limit is set on the Vancouver and Fremont intersection?
Correct.
AM peak only? I guess I'm trying to think, why isn't that maybe a PM peak?
Well, in this case, the as we find sometimes, that the AM, because of the way traffic is moving through an intersection, the AM might actually have more traffic conflicting with each other and creating extra delay than in most cases, it's the PM. That's the worst commute time. But occasionally we find that it's a reverse dynamic. And in this case, the AM couldn't be met with the additional left turn lane being added, but the PM was going to be fine. So, and it's because people have different directions that they travel in the morning versus the evening. So,
interesting. Other questions? Thank you, folks. Call the applicant forward. You're allotted 15 minutes. When you speak, please state your name for the record.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and commissioners. My name is Paul Reese. I am the architect for the applicant, Brian Wanamaker. And I've been working on this project for a number of years with Brian, the owner, and with city staff, various city staff and various bureaus. And it's gone through a lot of critical thought as far as what this what this project wants to be, what this site can be for the city. And what should happen here? And we've come to the conclusion that changing the zone for this site is a great idea for the city. It allows in the near future a viable and vibrant mix of uses that support what's happening on Mississippi right now. And it's done through the existing building that's there. It's a very lightly touched intervention. And in the future, it allows a well-designed, beautiful punctuation, if you will, to the gateway that is the end of Mississippi Avenue. Needless to say, we agree with the findings of the hearings officer and the conditions they've put on us. Listening to the discussion about the transportation, it's designing the building is going to be the easiest part. Trying to understand the transportation analysis is quite difficult. But I think at this point I'd like to turn this over to Brian, the owner and applicant, and let him talk about the project.
Thanks, Paul. Hello, my name is Brian Wanamaker, and I'd like to thank the mayor and council for the opportunity to speak in support of a zoning change for the property that I own and I'm trying to develop, located at 810 North Fremont. I consider the subject property a gateway to the Mississippi Corridor. It's a part of town I've been involved with for a long time, as I have developed and still own a number of properties in the neighborhood. When I purchased this property on North Fremont almost 3 years ago, it had been an asphalt paving company. The site was listed as a brownfield by the Oregon DEQ, largely because of the presence of 9 huge tanks capable of holding 73,000 gallons of industrial fuel. Within 90 days of the purchase and at my expense, the tanks were removed. I also cleaned up the site to the point that it is no longer listed as a contaminated property by DEQ. Another benefit of my purchase of the property is that it eliminated a lot of the traffic from heavy machinery and trucks that access the property via Fremont and Mississippi Avenue in both directions. I'm asking for the opportunity to take advantage of the changes I've made to turn this property into another asset for the Mississippi Corridor. Its current zoning is not in the character with what is going on in the rest of the neighborhood, and I strongly believe that the highest and best use of the property is not industrial, but rather EX. The continued successful redevelopment of Mississippi Avenue requires more pedestrian-friendly sidewalks. The city's plan to widen sidewalks would reduce road size. While this would have a positive impact on the properties currently zoned EX or retail, it will have a negative impact on the industrial use properties such as 810 North Fremont. The proposed thinning of Mississippi Avenue would reduce large truck traffic, thus lowering the value of 810 Fremont as an industrial site. Since widening the Mississippi Avenue sidewalk is most likely to continue, this effectively eliminates a viable trucking thoroughfare to and from the property. I've been developing properties in North and Northeast Portland for 21 years. I purchased my first property on the Mississippi Corridor in early 2001 and have owned property from Lloyd Center to Killingsworth since 1987. In 1998, I purchased the Falcon Apartments on Albina and Killingsworth. While maintaining the diversity of the neighborhood, I was able to develop the property into the Falcon Arts Community, a premier art community that offers studio space and housing units to showcase Portland artists such as entertainer Storm Large, painter Alexander Rokoff, Jim Brumberg of Mississippi Studios, and many others. My investment philosophy allowed the lower-income tenants who were in the building to retain their former rents. I also offered residents of the Falcon Art community some quality-of-life benefits such as free wireless internet, a rarity in low-income neighborhood. The point is that I'm a conscientious and responsible landlord who offers benefits to the immediate community. I am hopeful that with the zoning change I'm requesting today that we can build on the momentum I've had a role in creating on Mississippi Avenue. I took a chance on a lot of small first-time business owners and developed and supported some of the early retail businesses that helped revitalize the street, such as the nonprofit Bike Works, Video Verite, Crowbar, Pasta Bangs, Gravy, Miss Delta, and the Lupa Wine Bar. I have 150 apartments in this neighborhood with 2 office buildings that have 12 office suites, and I live in the neighborhood. I have a significant monetary investment in the neighborhood, but I and I'm also a conscientious landlord and community builder and love being part of what's happening on Mississippi Avenue. It's good for Portland, and I want to see it to continue. That is why I'm asking for your support with this zoning change. Mississippi Avenue does not need an asphalt paving facility or any other industrial use as the gateway into the neighborhood at this exciting point in its history. If this change is approved, I assure you that Mississippi Avenue will get more of what makes it so special. Thanks for your time and consideration.
Are there any questions for us, the applicants?
So are you planning to reuse the existing building? Did I hear that correctly?
Oh, well, yeah. It's you can touch it pretty lightly and do some fun things with it.
Other questions? Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Now we'll hear from persons who support the application. Did anybody sign up to testify?
Jeff Judd did, if needed. You're okay? Okay.
Were there persons who oppose the application?
No one signed up.
Well, there were, since neither spoke, the rebuttal by the applicant isn't necessary. So we'll go to council deliberations.
I'd move to accept the hearings officer's recommendations.
Here's a second. Please call the vote.
Fish?
Mr. Wanamaker, I just want to say I was struggling with this until you identified yourself as Storm Large's landlord. And that, I think...
that caught my attention as well.
I do not want to get on her bad side. I appreciate, sir, your coming and your presentation and the positive impact you're making on the community. I think this is a wonderful addition to what is developing along this street. And I'm pleased to support the resolution. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to also express my support for Mr. Wanamaker's and your vision and your commitment to this neighborhood. And this type of zone change is certainly, I think, what's the best for the neighborhood and our city. I also wanted to thank, once again, the excellent work of our staff, Kathleen and Jamie, for answering our maybe tough questions, but probably not so tough, just educational for us. But great, great work. Aye.
Potter.
Aye. We're recessed until 2 p.m. tomorrow.
We have a...
You're right. Okay. Now please read the item 1270.
Amend the comprehensive plan map, designations, and change zoning at 810 North Fremont Street at the request of Mississippi Partners, LLC, LU06-118-204-CPZC.
Please call the vote.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Now we're recessed until 2 p.m. tomorrow.
This is really nice. I'm going to do it. Thanks.